The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Can, but will we? Will we? Will we in time wake up to smell the CO2 and get Americans to care about their environmental future? Because after all, it is our life support system that is endangered, and Lord knows there's enough signs of that everywhere. Welcome to the Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Have another great show for you lined up. I'll begin first with telling you what's coming up in the second segment. Those who are on the East Coast and those who are visiting the East Coast to catch the fall foliage are noticing something. It's a little bit lackluster. The changing of the tree colors, leaf colors, which is such a wonderful tradition and experience, and also a big tourist attraction. It's not happening. It's happening later. The leaves are duller. The colors are less vibrant. And we're going to talk to someone who is studying this and blogging about this. Gail Zawacki, I should say, has a blog called Wit's End, which really appeals to me. We've been chatting on email, and I'm looking forward to having her perspective on today. She's also been down at Occupy Wall Street, and will tell us about what the green-minded folk down there are talking about. But first, I am thrilled to bring back from last week Stephen Lacey, my new favorite blogger on climateprogress.org, along with Joseph Rome's great post. He is just exactly on top of what's happening out there in the climate world, and that means scientifically, politically, and, of course, ecologically and media-wise, last but not least. So welcome back to the Green Front, Stephen. Thanks for joining us again.
Hi, Betsy. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Well, we got lots to talk about. I don't know if you had a chance to catch the Republican debates last night, but a lot of white people, mostly men, one woman, Michelle Bachmann, not one green word uttered. So love to chat about that if you happen to catch it. I made myself watch it. But first, let's talk about fake solar scandals. As if we, you know, have nothing else to concern ourselves with, we have smoke screens and made-up imbroglios when we should be, you know, in emergency mode here. What's the latest from Fox News that is to be quashed immediately?
Well, we successfully were able to quash the news this past week with a story that we put out debunking a fake solar scandal that a blogger had written and Fox News had run with on its primetime evening and morning shows. Not surprisingly, they were the only organization to pick it up, and we debunked the entire story. Coming off of the heels of Solyndra, this is a particularly damaging story for the solar industry. It pertains to a company called SunPower, which is a leading manufacturer installer based in the U.S. with manufacturing facilities all over the world.
I was at their plant 2 days ago, by the way. They've got a big operation in Richmond, California, right here.
So, yes, they do.
They're huge.
They are huge. They've been around for a long time. They have a product with the highest efficiencies on the market. It is a proven technology. They have built the largest plants, solar plants in the world over and over in countries around the world. So a very well-established company. And what happened was a blogger made up a story about SunPower getting a loan guarantee. And because of their stock price drop, which has plagued the entire solar industry because of the structural oversupply of panels, the glut of Chinese solar panels hitting the market, a lot of companies, particularly in the manufacturing space, are taking a hit in the stock market right now.
And Solyndra didn't
with
help,
that said,
I'm sure.
With that said, SunPower is developing a project for this energy developer, NRG. They are providing the solar panels. They are providing the construction services and then selling that project to NRG. So this blogger and Fox News came up with this story that this was a scandal twice as big as Solyndra. that SunPower was somehow going to default on this loan. They were going to go bankrupt very soon, and the government was going to be on the hook for $1.2 billion in loans. Well, SunPower is not even getting the loan guarantee. The company is doing fairly well. They're not even going to be owning this project. And this is a completely different project than an untested manufacturing company. You have a project that has an offtake agreement with a 20-year power purchase agreement with a utility company. You have the project already going to a well-known energy developer, and the chances of default on this loan are so incredibly low that this is just completely different. So we went through all the points. I don't want to belabor every single point here because it would be in too much detail. The point was they had the story completely and utterly wrong. And they ran with it, and the blowhard pundits at Fox News who claim to be business reporters know nothing about the solar industry or about how these deals are structured, and ran in a completely false story. So we broke it down, and some other publications have picked it up, and those stories have since stopped. But this is what we're dealing with in the post-Solyndra world, where folks are looking for anything that they can find to discredit this administration and discredit the rapidly growing solar industry, as we talked about in the last interview.
It is nauseating. As you said in your post, you warn people you may need to go to the bathroom. It really, I get a visceral, sickening feeling in my stomach, and there's so much of this. And for those of us who are so tuned into the urgency of the ecological climate crisis, peak oil, we lose sleep at night, and then we have to deal with this garbage. Are things reaching a critical mass, Stephen, where we just have to, or create a critical mess perhaps, we just have to sue Fox TV and Rupert Murdoch and get these, as I say, get Sean Hannity offset, carbon offset, Hannity offset, and the ilk? I mean, this is just part of the problem, but we don't have time, we don't have bandwidth to let things go backwards.
I don't know what the answer is in terms of bringing a lawsuit, but what I can tell you is that the solar industry needs to step up its efforts and demand meetings with editorial boards, have better meetings with journalists, and continue to come out in front on these, because if these hang out there for too long, they become common wisdom, and the solar industry and any other clean energy industries take numerous steps back. And this is exactly what happened with the ClimateGate scandal. Governments around the world, independent bodies around the world, have determined that the scientists who had their emails hacked at East Anglia University did nothing wrong. Completely exonerated the scientists. But today, a couple of years later, we still have a very loud, vocal opposition against climate science that has been elevated because of that scandal a couple of years back. And this has the potential to do that. And so I think that the solar industry needs to be very conscious of that and consider the impact that these damaging stories false damaging stories can have to the future development of the industry.
Well, especially when we're in a political climate where those who would do nothing to address climate change are looking for anything to exploit. And that's why I say we have to be on some collision course here, either with nature or with each other. You know, those who, forget red versus blue, just those who are tuned into green issues,
right,
and those who are completely actively, selectively trying to roll things back. It's just, it's too hard to take. I mean, there's such an urgency that, is real and palpable. look at the weather of the last year, just to name one. Manifestation. I thank you for what you're doing, and I share your frustration, and you guys are so good about getting the facts out there that really catch them in the act. The question is what to do about it.
We're trying our best, and Joe Rome, our editor at Climate Progress, always says, if you fundamentally don't believe in the science of climate change, then really you're not going to believe in clean energy. Because to you, to folks who deny the science of climate change and the urgency of doing something about the problem, to them, clean energy is just another special interest. And to us, this is something different. This is a generational imperative, and we want to see government dollars spent in the best way. We we want to see this done efficiently, and we want to see the private sector take this up as much as possible. With that said, we have a different sense of urgency than folks who just fundamentally don't believe in the science of climate change. And so you run into a major barrier there. But with that said, we're trying to stay on top of this, provide the best facts possible, tell people about the urgency of the problem, and try to provide solutions in a realistic way.
And that word, not one word, was uttered about climate change or carbon or any environmental problem last night, of course, at the Republican debate. And not surprising, of course, but when you really get what that means. That means Obama's our best hope, and we know that Obama is likely to okay the Keystone Pipeline, and so much disappointment all around on lack of leadership there. It almost feels like it's not going to come, the solutions are not going to come at a political level. Do you share that concern and fear?
I do. I think that we're going to continue to see many of the initiatives that support the industry, either climate reduction policy, or excuse me, carbon reduction policies or renewable energy promotion policies. They're going to come on the local and state levels. I just don't see the federal leadership on either the Democratic or the Republican side. Particularly on the Republican side, you've seen a number of energy plans released from the leading candidates. All of them almost completely ignore renewable energy. Renewable energy is an afterthought. Except for the centrist candidate John Huntsman from Utah, the other candidates simply want to open up the United States everywhere, every environmentally sensitive area to offshore drilling. They want to increase coal production. They want to do everything they can to promote the status quo. And that is a central point to the energy plans of the leading Republican candidates, and it's very scary.
And do you think that John Huntsman saying that climate change is real and those who would disbelieve it are, you know, basically fools, do you think that hurt him among Republicans because he is so low down there with Rick Santorum? And he's the one that, you know, those of us who are, again, tuned into our environment are saying, well, gee, if we had to have a Republican, he's at least the one candidate who stands out who is speaking the truth and not afraid to. And yet, do you think that's hurt him? And if so, what does that say about this political season?
You know, I'm not sure that that has necessarily hurt him. I think that has actually elevated him in some way broadly. But John Huntsman is a centrist, and this is not a centrist race right now. He is completely on the fringe because Republicans are looking for, during the primary race particularly, a very ideological candidate that is going to stick to the talking points of the Tea Party and now the broader Republican Party. I think John Huntsman is very refreshing and, quite frankly, someone, particularly on the energy side and on the international relations side, who a lot of Democrats could get behind. You know, he's very progressive on many of those issues. I don't think that the climate change on some of them. I mean, compared to many of the Republican candidates, he's very progressive.
we have to make that disclaimer. Yes.
Absolutely. But I don't think that it's completely hurt him. I actually think that it's elevated his status in some way to be able to say, hey, over here, I actually don't agree with the anti-science, anti-environmental regulation stances of the rest of these candidates. But, you know, John Huntsman doesn't really have a chance right now, unfortunately.
But he has distinguished himself with that, at least, you know, for those of us looking to the election, the race with the green lens. And they did mention nuclear last night, of course. It was a question about Yucca Mountain, but that's as far as they went into discussing any kind of, you know, energy issues. Predictable, again. Okay, so next topic. You have an article about how investors worth $20 trillion together are calling for urgent action on climate. Are they willing to put their money where their mouth is?
Well, it would appear so. And, you know, it's interesting. We're following the 99% movement very closely, which is, of course, a backlash to the enormous financial and political inequities in this country. But there's an interesting point to make about this, and that is that the financial community has actually gotten behind carbon reduction policies. Not all of the large investment firms in this sector, but many of them have gotten behind carbon reduction policies and renewable energy promotion policies because, well, they realize that acting on climate can actually be a profit-generating enterprise. There's a lot of wealth to be had across the entire economy by actually acting on this. And so what we saw was a letter of 285 investors, you know, pension funds, hedge fund managers, private equity firms, other investment banks, all signing a letter of agreement that we need strong, immediate action on reducing emissions and developing renewable energy. And these investment firms cumulatively make up $20 trillion in assets. So the idea that somehow this is a these solutions are simply being propped up by the public sector and they're only only governments want this to happen is completely false. They're saying put the appropriate prices and the money will flow to the solutions in this sector. So I think that's a very powerful message and something that's positive during these murky, dark political times.
Didn't Vinod Khosla just step up and offer another billion or so for clean tech?
He did. He raised another billion-dollar fund, and about half of that is going to go to clean tech companies, a very wide range of clean tech companies. He's been a longtime investor in this sector, a big believer, has had his, as any venture capitalist has had his share of successes and failures, but he has stuck behind the clean energy sector and, you know, raised $500 million for more development. And, again, another positive story.
Yes, except I have to get my plug in here. Not $1 going to green media, which would help educate America and connect the dots for more voters. And I stand by that because I've been watching this and covering all the billions going into clean tech, which is terrific. Don't get me wrong. It's just part of the missing piece, I think, is having mainstream media outlets somewhere. And if not the mainstream media, then get those of us who are talking about it elevated to a platform where these issues, these very critical, important issues, and experts like yourself and the ones you cover can get out there. So just make a note. Make a note of that.
Absolutely.
Not $1.
All of us in that are covering these issues know the importance of supporting the proper media outlets.
Absolutely. And just getting more green content out there on whatever media outlets we can, and there's just not enough. Internet is terrific, but who goes to read your wonderful climate blog? People who are concerned about the climate, we need to get you guys out there, and that's what I hope we can work on together. You have another story from Rocky Mountain Institute. I just heard Amory Levin speaking at Bioneers this weekend, and they have a positive energy vision for our future, but it's not one that was even considered or hinted at or uttered again in the debates last night. Tell us about what Rick Perry is not seeing in his crystal ball.
Well, Rick Perry and other leading candidates just seem to suffer from a lack of vision. The Rocky Mountain Institute, which has been extraordinarily progressive on developing a profitable future for clean energy technologies, energy efficiency, and climate solutions, they're coming out with their new plan called Reinventing Fire, looking at how to transition, to realistically transition to a mostly renewable electricity and renewable fuels-based economy by in the next 40 years or so, and to still grow the economy by over 150% in that time frame. They are very focused on not just on developing theoretical solutions, but helping businesses understand specific pieces of value that they can approach and develop solutions around. So the Rocky Mountain Institute is about to release its full plan. I know that that Amory Levins has already sold out of his book in at many stops that he's made. They've got this great video out that is the complete opposite of the campaign videos for energy plans that you see from leading Republican candidates. And again, this is a nice refreshing reminder that people are working on the solutions. And while many of us are not happy with the pace of change, there really are a lot of amazing minds at work on the ground level in this country and around the world helping to solve these problems. So I recommend people go check out the Rocky Mountain Institute, go check out their Reinventing Fire page. They have a number of studies that they've put out looking at transitioning the fuel and electricity sectors, looking at specific businesses that have made new products and approaches to the market work, and they've got this great new video that they've put out on what their vision for the clean energy economy in the U.S. will be.
And you're right, there's a lot of great work going on, and sometimes I can get a little bit negative. It's not that I'm not aware of it, covering it, promoting it, cheering it, hoping for it, but as someone said, will it be enough for nature to notice? Let's hope so.
Yes, let's hope so. I would like to think so, but at this point, the situation is becoming increasingly dire.
It is, and while we're talking dire, let's just say a little bit more about the Republican crop, Herman Cain, pizza man, proud of his affiliation with the Koch brothers. Oh, pizza and Coke, I guess that goes well together.
That is, I actually hadn't thought of that. That's pretty good. I wish I had come up with that in the.
You can use it. Just credit
the
Green
yeah.
Front. The best kept
Herman
secret
Cain
in radio.
Is the surprise candidate. He's from Georgia. He made lots of money in developing a pizza chain. Has not had any experience in politics, but sort of came out of left field, and he's trying to prove that he's not the flavor of the week in the Republican presidential race. And he has in the past done a lot of speaking tours for Americans for Prosperity, which is a group that works on the state level, which is funded by the Koch brothers, who run Koch Industries, one of the largest private corporations in the world, which fights vociferously against climate change effort, mitigation efforts, and renewable energy. And they've funded millions and millions of dollars toward Americans for Prosperity on the state level to cut down these programs. And Herman Cain has spoken to crowds funded by Americans for Prosperity numerous times and has come out and said that I'm extraordinarily proud of my relationship with the Koch brothers, which are notoriously anti-clean energy and have put tens of millions of dollars behind trying to stop these solutions. So somewhat scary that we have another candidate who is starting to make it out in front of the pack here, who is blatantly proud of his affiliation with an organization that is so blatantly anti-solution.
And then funding it predominantly. They're the primary
yes.
funders, so actively,
oh, yes.
blatantly, notoriously, darkly. And what planet do they have reservations on? Where are their kids and grandkids going to be living? What kind of climate are they going to have? That's where, you know, it's really hard to fathom.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are proud of what they have done to cut down these programs. This is a source of pride for them, and that's what should scare us the most.
Okay, make a note to self. Call doctor for antidepressant and sleep aid. It's really getting dark out here. It really is. Okay, so some good news, Stephen. General Electric, run, of course, by Jeffrey Immelt, who is, despite being a Republican, working with President Obama to try to create jobs. He's one who believes that there are jobs to be created in the solar industry.
Yeah, and GE is actually opening up a manufacturing facility for thin film solar modules in the next couple of years. They've announced that they're going to be building this facility in Colorado. It's going to create over 350 jobs and pump out a lot of solar panels for the global market. And this comes off of the heels of the Solyndra controversy and a couple of other solar firms that have had to shut their U.S. manufacturing facilities because of increased pressure from low-cost Chinese producers. And GE has placed its bet on the U.S. market partially and said, you know what, we can develop modules here. We can do it cost effectively, and we are going to provide a local benefit to the U.S. economy in the process. So my theme of the article was that you can't count American manufacturing out quite yet. There are a lot of companies with low-cost technologies, with innovative solar technologies that are probably going to set up shop here. And while the situation is definitely sketchy for a lot of solar companies, this is a very good news story, I think, for the solar industry.
And let's go to another news story of the week, certainly a good positive note to end on, and that was the riveting speech by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. Now we just need to get, from White House's lips to the White House's ears. Recap that for us, for those who haven't seen it yet.
Sure. Senator Whitehouse made an unbelievable speech in which he explained that the U.S. is going to be condemned by history if we don't act on climate change. And it was this fabulous 20-minute speech talking about the historical context to what we are doing, laying out the scientific case, laying out the business case, and explaining why the incredible, compelling case for action on climate change. And he, really gave it to his senatorial colleagues for many of them delaying action on climate. So this was a great news story. It was a fabulous speech. I recommend people go to Climate Progress to watch the video. And it's very refreshing to see that a political leader has the ability to step up like this and really say it like it is.
Now we just need to hear it from the White House.
Wouldn't that be great?
Well, a lot of people feel that this is exactly...
Are we out of time?
Just another minute.
Oh, sure. I mean, I was just at the Green Build Conference in Toronto, and Tom Friedman gave a speech where he said that the White House fundamentally failed to back up the scientific community on climate issues. And as you know, Joe Rome has written on this numerous times, that this administration, while supportive of clean energy, has completely failed in backing up the scientific community on these issues. So, yes, you're absolutely right. It'd be great to hear the Obama administration say this.
And I'm going to be hearing Thomas Friedman. He's speaking in Marin County tomorrow night. And just one other note, just to keep people abreast of my green travels and how I like to bring it all to you, was at a screening of Chris Payne's new movie, which is Revenge of the Electric Car. We're going to have Chris on the show next week, I believe, and I want to recommend that film when it comes out in a couple of weeks, hopefully coming soon to a theater near you, to not only see it, but tell all your friends to see it. Really important and a bit of an optimistic note, but first we've got to grow the green marketplace and create demand so Americans, when all these electric cars come out next year, will go and buy them or lease them. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you, Betsy. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, enlightening, and hope to have you back soon. When we come back from a quick break, we're going to be talking with another new favorite blogger. You'll hear about her and how she is watching the trees as they are growing dimmer and browner when they should be red, orange, purple, and green. What's going on with fall foliage? Could it have something to do with our changing climate? We'll be right back.